This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 17th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 321. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the Trudeau Liberal government finally admits abuse and corruption are ruining Canada's sports system. But instead of the public inquiry with subpoena power that athletes demanded, the sport minister opted for the Future of Sport in Canada Commission. Hear from Minister Carla Quattro and the Director General of Global Athlete, Rob Kohler. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It will be an 18-month exercise, some of it in public, some of it not. Will it save Canada's sports system or just tick a box on the way to the next election? On December 11th, Sport Minister Carla Quattro announced the Future of Sport in Canada Commission. It will cost $10 million to $15 million and be led by a legal expert with two special advisors. It is supposed to root out abuse and corruption in federally funded amateur sport, but will it? Here is Minister Quattro from the news conference in Ottawa.
It's not a public inquiry under the Public Inquiry Act. In fact, it's expressly not, and you'll see that referred to in the terms of reference. This commission is modeled after the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It's trauma-informed, victim-centered, forward-looking. There was a lot of research done into a model that we could balance the need to not re-traumatize victims or survivors, and at the same time do a real deep dive into the sport system and come up with concrete actions. So c'est vraiment the Truth and Reconciliation Commission model that we ultimately landed on.
Madame Quattro, you've been Minister of Sports before, in between 2015 and 2017, I believe. Did you see all that coming, all that we saw last year, the abuse in sports and so on? Could you have prevented it at the time you were minister?
It's a question I've asked myself a lot, and I'm sorry I didn't dig in more in my first go-round in this job. You know, at the time, the kind of the safe sport issue, the integrity in sport issue was concussion. What parents and coaches and athletes and medical professions were talking about was concussion, and that's the issue we dug in over those 2 years, creating national concussion guidelines, holding a national summit, creating and developing protocols for concussion, which is absolutely a safe sport issue, an integrity issue. It was not the issue that was top of mind. It was absolutely going on, looking back. But yeah, I should have dug deeper. But my focus at that time was concussions.
My guest on this edition is Rob Kohler, the Director General of Global Athlete. Global Athlete is a non-governmental organization that advocates for sport integrity and athlete safety. I spoke with Rob Kohler on December 11th after Minister Quattro's announcement.
The Future of Sport in Canada Commission will be like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, but it will not be a judicial public inquiry. What was your initial reaction?
100% disappointment. For 2 years, the athlete groups that we've worked with, from gymnasts to figure skaters to fencers, have been very clear on asking for a judicial inquiry that has the ability and powers to compel people to provide information and evidence. So it has fallen short. But there is, I guess, a silver lining a little bit, that for the Canadian government to enact a commission of this nature, where the budget's $10 to $15 million to review the Canadian sports system, they have admitted fault. They have admitted that the Canadian sports system is broken. It's filled with toxic cultural abuse, and they're spending time to review and to look into it. The big thing here is, okay, this is what they've moved forward with. We reluctantly accept, but the big next step is the devil's in the details. Who is the commissioner? Who are the two support staff that will be working with along the commissioner, ensuring they have no conflict of interest of sport, they're not linked with sport, and they have full independence. And as well, we've told the minister directly, the terms of reference, they shouldn't be stagnant. They must be nimble. They must be able to have the commissioner's involvement. And the very groups, which are Global Athlete and Gymnast for Change, who are the result of this commission, and why this commission has been established, because of the advocacy work. So more work needs to be done. Still need to maintain pressure to make sure whatever is being done is done with the best intentions to do one thing, that is to improve safe and sport in Canada and make it safer for every Canadian.
Commission like this would have more weight if it was a judge, a former Supreme Court judge from one of the provinces, or even a federal court judge or Supreme Court judge. Just an independent legal expert doesn't even sound to be very powerful.
I agree. And we have been very open and very direct with the minister and her office that if the right people aren't selected, we will kill this thing before it even starts. And highly criticize it. We were disappointed that we weren't brought along and into discussions on what terms of reference should look like, on how to scope this commission or this inquiry, or it's not an inquiry, but this way forward. And if you're going to bring those that are advocating for change, if you're not going to bring them along, you start in an area of not trusting. And the trust has already been broken for the past 2 years, and it would have been very easy to gain trust by getting involved in engagement. That hasn't been the case. And now we will make sure that every step along the way and any decision made in establishing this commission is highly scrutinized and publicly shared with those that are involved, whether we're happy or displeased with the way it's moving forward.
You met with her in Geneva at the Sporting Chance Forum, the United Nations in Geneva for the Sporting Chance Forum. How did you characterize that meeting? How long was that meeting, and what did you come away with?
The meeting was close to an hour, I think, 45 minutes to an hour. I think it was basically the same stuff she talked about today. So she did give us a heads up on what was happening. We did express our concerns, not to the level of detail that we heard today, just that there was an announcement occurring. But we started the conversation about trust. And there's no trust. There's no trust in the Minister of Sport. There's no trust in the Canadian sports system. And we said to her very clearly that if those that have done the harm already in sport are engaged in this any reform, then you're just recycling a poor system and a bad system, and doing a surface level review to make it look good, but not have any real meaningful reforms. So we were very direct and open. You know, the fact that Canada was asked to speak at the Sport and Human Rights Conference and the Sporting Chance conference, it was a little bit concerning that they invited a country who has proven to have very poor human rights when it comes to athletes, that have ignored for years and decades the amount of abuse happening, in some cases covered it up. So there was a concern, and we've expressed that openly both to the center and with the minister, that we thought it was a little bizarre that she was invited to speak given the crisis happening in Canada. We are where we are today, and we have to accept, but we're not going to accept the status quo. We're going to make sure that there's a strong push that whatever's being developed is done in the best way with the most possible, done in the best way that ensures independence, transparency, and no conflicts of interest. That's the key.
Yeah, what about the other measures she announced today, such as removing the Office of the Sport Integrity Commissioner and the Abuse-Free Sport Program out of the Sport Dispute Resolution Center of Canada? The Sport Canada Athlete Advisory Committee will now become a ministerial advisory committee. Will any of these changes make a difference?
We have been advocating since the beginning when the SDRCC was appointed as the body responsible for Safe Sport in Canada. And it was a failure, just that appointment alone, because you cannot be judge and jury. You cannot be an organization that hears appeals in the country, or and at the same time be sanctioning people. You can't do both. So it was and the knee-jerk reaction was to establish the Office of the Sport Integrity Commissioner, which they tried to sell that it was independent, but very clearly we learned and through public disclosure at committee hearings that the SDRCC and OSIC are the same organization. So that's an important step forward. We have called for the Office of the Sport Integrity Commissioner, or whether this any safe sport mechanism in Canada, to be moved outside the sport system, because there's too many inherent real or perceived conflicts of interest where people are trying to protect each other. So moving it out, having a human rights focus and a child focus, to ensure that it's done properly and independently and done timely, which is the major problem happening now. It's not timely, and victims of abuse sit for years before anything's done. So I think that is a step in the right direction. Again, the devil's in the detail when they move forward with any changes, but I think that's an important one.
Mr. Coulter also talked about this International Working Group on Integrity and Safe Sport. I guess that means she'll be talking to sport ministers in other countries. Do you think that she has any energy to do this, or any political clout to do this, to talk with other sport ministers to actually get something like this happening?
I was involved when Canada, not with the Canadian government, but with the Canadian Anti-Doping Program and then the World Anti-Doping Agency, when the Canadian government started an international cooperation group on anti-doping, where they gathered the countries of like mind to discuss reform, and which ended up leading to the creation of WADA over the long term. It ended up in creating ISO standards for anti-doping through countries and agreements. So there was a collective. I think it was useful. It was eventually disbanded because it was there was no need for it. So I think that could be a beneficial thing to help other countries, but surely Canada shouldn't be leading it right now, given that Canada's still trying to figure out what they want to do internally. When you raise the whole idea of moving the athlete committee or advisory committee from Sport Canada to the ministry's office, you know, we're a little tired of athletes being used as advisors. If athletes really are that important, then athletes should not be just advisors, but athlete groups, representation groups should be involved in a collective approach where it's a 50-50 partnership, not just advising. If you really want athletes to be a member and be a part of decision making, then give them half the power to make those decisions, not just advisory. And a lot of times I've seen these things in the past. I'm not saying this is going to happen with what the ministers just announced, but in the past, what happens is organizations bring athletes they know that have been groomed through the system to continue and support the current status quo. So it creates this false sense of athlete involvement, athlete engagement. We listen to the athletes when in fact, if you only have five or six or eight around the table, they actually don't represent athletes. They represent themselves and their opinions. And it's not how collective decisions are made. So I don't put a lot of stock in those commissions or those advisory groups. I think they're surface level and more ceremonial in nature than anything else.
Yeah, the minister was asked, because this is her second time around as the sport minister. She was original sport minister in the Trudeau Liberal government from 2015, was there for a couple of years and then was moved to other portfolios. And now she's back as of the summer when the cabinet shuffle happened. She was asked why she didn't take a greater interest in this issue during her first time around. She said that she regretted that she didn't, and that at the time, the issue of concussions in sport was really what she was focused on. As much as concussions were an important issue at the time, shouldn't they have had the ability to multitask?
I mean, this is exactly why we've been calling for an inquiry, because the role that Sport Canada has fulfilled in the country has been ceremonial. It has not been proactive thinking. It hasn't been looking at change for the better. It hasn't been wanting to make a deep dive in how money's being spent and who's made accountable. It really hasn't done anything to create a better sport system. In fact, what it has done over the years is to divert attention and responsibility to non-governmental organizations like Hold the Podium and the Canadian Olympic Committee, where they are deciding where funding is going. And if you are a Canadian person, taxpayer, and you have private organizations and non-for-profits deciding where the Canadian government goes, money goes, I think that that's questionable. And the fact that they don't have the capacity, I think, of course, they have the capacity to manage various issues. It's the willingness to do so. You raised, you know, the whole idea of the broader integrity issues. And I flag this now, and I'll flag it again, but do not go down the route in Canada to have a larger umbrella integrity organization that takes on everything, such as anti-doping, match fixing, abuse in sport, anything. You look at integrity issues, it cannot be one organization to manage all of that. You know, when you have abuse in sport, it's a very different thing than when you have doping in sport. Both affect the integrity, but the way they're dealt with and managed are very different in nature. If you're an anti-doping person, you're catching the cheats, you're trying to protect the clean athletes. If you're a safe sport person, you're trying to expose the truth and suspend those who have done harm. So one is going after athletes, the other is protecting athletes, and the two don't meld together. So I think we need to be very, very careful and watch that space carefully, that this is not the route Canada is going. Because if this is the route Canada is going to give ultimate power to one organization, I think we're in trouble. The safe sport issue is not a sport issue. It's an abuse issue occurring in sport, and that's why we've continued to ask for it to be outside of sport when it comes to reporting abuse. There's too many inherent conflicts of interest, and it's a small community to have independence when you leave it inside sport.
Looking at the schedule for this, the minister announces in December 2023 that this process, this commission, will have an 18-month mandate, and that brings it to the middle of 2025. The next scheduled federal election is October 2025. The next year in 2026, the FIFA World Cup. Vancouver and Toronto are both host cities of the World Cup, being hosted by Canada, US, and Mexico. How do you think that dynamic might affect the way this inquiry goes one way or another? And could it have also affected the composition of the inquiry, that if there wasn't an election around the corner, and if there wasn't a mega event coming to Canada, could we have seen a public inquiry?
It's a good question, and I don't have the answer to that. As I said, we are disappointed that the public inquiry is not happening, because that would have been the most, the best tool to really, if you really want to expose the truth, to use. The decision's been made, and as we move forward, like, we are not going to let this government or any government off easy when they make an announcement to say they're going to look into the abuse in sport, when they say they're going to appoint certain people. The gas pedal is still fully down. It's still fully pushed down. We have to recognize the announcement today with disappointment, but we're not letting off, and we're going to continue to pressure to make sure every step of the way is done in the interest of survivors, athletes, and advocates who have been demanding change and total wholesale reform throughout Canadian sport.
That was Rob Kohler, the Director General of Global Athlete. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, U.S., Taiwan hold meeting on boosting Taiwan's international participation. Both sides explored ways to include Taiwan in UN system and other global bodies. Their talks focused on opportunities to support Taiwan's participation in the World Health Assembly and the International Civil Aviation Organization. The U.S. participants highlighted Taiwan's expertise in health, food security, aviation, green fuels, and bolstering women's economic and political empowerment. In the Kyoto news, ex-Tokyo Olympics Organizing Committee exec denies bribery charges. Haruyuki Takahashi said he is innocent of all charges at the opening of his trial at the Tokyo District Court. The 79-year-old is accused of receiving $1.4 million in bribes from five different sources between 2017 and 2022 in return for helping companies land Olympic sponsorships. 10 people are guilty so far of paying bribes in connection with the Olympics, and one has been found guilty of receiving them. In the Hong Kong Free Press, detained Hong Kong activist Chow Heng Tung, awarded Human Rights Prize by France and Germany. The former vice chairperson of the group that organized Hong Kong's Tiananmen vigils has been in detention since September 2021 for allegedly inciting subversion under the national security law. The human rights lawyer was formerly with Hong Kong Alliance in Support of Patriotic Democratic Movements of China, which disbanded in 2021 after Beijing imposed the 2020 national security law.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In King 5, 800 people left prison without TB exposure being identified, officials say. Healthcare providers are being asked to test formerly incarcerated people after 800 weren't notified of their exposure before they left the prison system in 2021. The Tacoma Pierce County Health Department issued an advisory Wednesday to healthcare providers to test for tuberculosis in people who were jailed. A class action lawsuit was also filed in September against the Department of Corrections, alleging they mishandled the tuberculosis outbreak. In the Oregonian, Oregon's Measure 110 drug treatment hotline has served only 577, gets new operator. Oregon's state health officials are overhauling the state's underutilized Measure 110 hotline for connecting people with drug treatment services amid public calls for repealing or reforming the law, which decriminalized minor possession of drugs and funneled millions of tax dollars into substance abuse treatment and services. In the Times Colonist, Victoria's Rink of Dreams given trial run ahead of Hockey Day in Canada. It took 10 volunteers about 2 hours to construct the half rink. The full rink will take about 4 hours to put together on January 15th at Ship Point. It will be a centerpiece of the Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada in Victoria from January 17th to 20th. The four-day $850,000 Festival of Hockey will conclude with the day-long nationally Sportsnet broadcast and Ron McLean hosted event, around broadcast of all seven NHL Canadian teams and a Victoria Royals versus Kamloops Blazers WHL Junior game.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the Lower Mainland Christmas Bureau, which collects games and toys for less fortunate girls and boys since 1930. Go to lmcb.ca to find out how you can help this Christmas time.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 17th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 17th of December in 1989, The Simpsons debuted on Fox Network with the episode Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire?
No!
758 episodes and counting, one of the longest-running TV shows in history. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as it happens on X, formerly known as Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.